Hi and welcome. You're listening to the Friday Happy Hour with me, Anne Marie Kelly, the victorious woman and recovering good girl. And I want to help you find your personal power and then use it for all it's worth. Well, it's Friday, and once again, we're winding up the work week at Happy Hour, talking about things that matter to us women in midlife and you men who care about us. And I'm so glad to be having Happy Hour with you today. How many of you use social media, by the way? I mean things like Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest. No, Pinterest and Instagram. See, like you could tell, nobody who's like 30 would ever say Pinterest. So, but they're all out there. And did you know that women in midlife are the fastest growing segment of Facebook users? And not just women, but women and men over 50 are the newest, most avid users of social media. You wouldn't think so, but it's true. And sometimes I think it's because you want to keep up with your kids and your grandkids and see what they're doing. But I get a lot of stuff on my Facebook page that isn't about kids. So today we have an expert in one of in LinkedIn. It's the unrated social media network. And Donna Sardula is coming to Happy Hour in a little bit, and she's going to help you and me get ourselves a LinkedIn makeover. Now, today's August 1st. Can you believe that it's August already? I feel like you and I were just talking about winter and then the snows and then the storms that happened in the summer, the early summer and the spring. Well, but this week the weather could not have been nicer. Wouldn't you agree? I don't remember the last time during the summer when I've had my air conditioner on so little and had the windows open so much, and I love it. I love that fresh air and sort of cleans out all the cobwebs when it comes breezing through the house. But, when August comes, we're talking about the end of summer, of those last vacations, kids going back to school. It's a good time to go for your summer. This is my good shopping time, like the last couple of weeks, and especially if you're Coldwater Creek users, and I don't think it's open. I think it was closing this week, but they're going out of business, so I got a lot of stuff. Shirts for $9 and $10. I loved it. And, of course, now you're seeing all the fall clothes, and, in a couple of weeks, you're probably going to see Christmas things. Everything's seems to go faster. But, it does seem like time flies by, doesn't it? Now, I know people in midlife talk about that all the time, and they seem to think it moves faster. And I know it feels like it's moving faster. But you know what I think it is? When you and I were younger, we were always waiting for something. And whenever you're waiting for something, time goes slow. You're waiting to go to high school. You're waiting to turn 16 so you can drive. You're waiting to turn 21 so you can drink and go to the bars. Then you're waiting to find the right person and get married. Stuff like that. But, ask any pregnant woman in her last month or two of pregnancy how fast the time is going. And if she doesn't smack you first, she's going to tell you that it can't possibly go fast enough until that baby comes out. And on the other side of that, if ask anybody who's lost a loved one. I remember one of my neighbors passed away, and his spouse said, "I just can't wait for that whole first year to be over." And it went so slowly. So I think it's what's happening in your life that determines whether you're going fast or whether time is going fast or slow. And, by the time you get to midlife, unless you're the kind of person who's constantly setting goals and you have some fun things to look forward to, you aren't waiting for a lot of things. And the things you are waiting for, like retirement and Social Security, they don't get you necessarily jazzed up. Well, unless you hate your job and you're looking and you like to play golf and you're looking for retirement to be able to play golf. But then, of course, you have to have the money to play golf because it's an expensive sport. And you have to, if you want to travel, you have to have money for that. So, if you don't have any of those happening, you think the time is going really fast, and sometimes you feel like you're running to catch up. I posted a couple articles on my blog today on the Happy Hour wrap-up at victoriouswoman.com. One article from Forbes magazine came out in March, and it talks about retiring early. It would be most interesting for you listeners who are in that 45 to 50 range, 40 to 55 maybe. I'm not thinking about it so much for retiring early, but as a map for adjusting your lifestyle while you still have time to put money away. While we're still in our working years, that's a good time to do that. And the other article is from USA Today. And it's more for you listeners who are already retired, who aren't ready to retire, but when you do, you still want to work at something that's fun and fulfilling. So either you're retired or you're thinking about it. You know, there's a woman in that article who was a teacher, and she switched jobs. She loved teaching, but she switched. And now she reads stories and entertains kids at library programs. And for her, what made the shift for her was a health scare that turned things around. And in the article, she's quoted as saying, a lot of times when you have a life-changing experience, you reevaluate your life. I was happy in all areas of my life, but I thought the library program sounded like lots of fun, and at that time, I needed some fun. Now, that article also quotes Frank Farley. He's a psychologist from University of Pennsylvania, and you know, some of you might know him because he shows up on in the media sometimes. Well, he talks about in planning a midlife makeover or a plan for retirement, figuring out something that will, and I'm quoting, sustain your commitment, passion, and drive for years to come. Geez, that's a tall order, isn't it? You know, when you're in your working years, you're just doing it to make ends meet and pay, you know, take care of the kids and stuff. But this is commitment, passion, and drive for years to come. And he also suggests, quoting again, a simple formula for success is success equals self-knowledge plus motivation. And I can buy that one. I had that experience in my own life. And that kind of thing makes me think about Gloria, one of my mother's girlfriends from Maris Grove. You know, I was at Maris Grove so much with my mom that the women who were my mom's friends became like aunts to me. So even though it's been 4 years since my mom passed, I still get together with them a couple of times a year. Well, anyway, I was talking to Gloria the other day, and only because she caught me at work. Otherwise, we might have just done voicemails back and forth, and I understand that I'm busy, but she's almost 80. She's one of the busiest women I know. The other day she told me that she's cut some of her volunteer jobs out, and I don't know what she cut out because she's still never home. Gloria's one of the most upbeat, energetic, and enthusiastic women I know, especially for someone who is the age that she is. When I told her that, I said, when I'm your age, Gloria, I want to be Gloria. But, you know, Gloria pretty much does what that USA article talks about. You know, she has commitment and passion. Yeah, so what would you do in retirement? Would you play golf all the time? I know people who live in places where they play golf every day. You probably have seen those commercials for the Villages in Florida. Wouldn't be my cup of tea, but a lot of people seem to really like it. And I think that they must be more serious about golf than they even ever were about their jobs. They're total golf addicts. And, you know, when I studied ballroom dancing at DuPont Country Club, about 10 years ago, I was one of the youngest people there, including the instructor, Vince, who was almost 80. Most of the people in my group were retired or almost retired and were taking ballroom for exercise and to meet new people. But some of those dancers, they were taking those courses for the second and third time. They were longtime dancers, and they started dancing in their 40s and 50s, which is in that age frame that I was in. And they were such fun to watch. Joseph and I never got that good. And we still dance, but we still aren't that good. But those people were ballroom dance addicts, and they went out 3-4 nights a week. And that's what they lived there in their retirement for. Well, over the years, I've met people who opened up coffee shops, bookstores, bed and breakfast and vacation destinations, where they became consultants. I know a couple men who, in their early 70s, they work for companies and they work a couple of days a week. And I've been reading about how companies love people like that. They love what they do. They call them snowbirds. They have like these snowbird programs because these people don't just have the experience and a skill set. They have a different work ethic than their younger counterparts. And the best part to me when I talk to these guys that I know is that they feel purposeful, but they don't feel stressed because, you know, after all, if they lose that job, it's no big deal to them. They're already retired. So when I listen to them, I think, yeah, that's the ticket. Well, a couple months ago, there was an article in the New York Times about CVS wanting to retain older workers rather than have them retire. And somebody from the AAP RP, Deborah Band is her name, said that about all the older workers, they bring a lot to the workplace. Many employers are seeing that older workers are very dependable, that they have a commitment to their job, that they bring some wisdom to the job. All those traits are very valuable to employers. And, you know, it's not just CVS, but I've been hearing that from a decent number of companies. You know, maybe not those buttoned up corporate environments, you know, if there is such a thing anymore in business casual corporate America, but in other businesses such as consulting and real estate. And, yep, I'm getting so I wonder, what would you do in retirement? You know, I ran a corporate university, so I used to get a lot of people at that point who used to want to, they took their early retirement, or they retired, and now I always thought I'd like to do real estate, and maybe they got into real estate sales, or they got into home repairs, or home staging, stuff that they thought would be fun. So what would you do if you were retiring? Now's a good time to start thinking about it, because you want to get your ducks lined up. Well, if you're thinking about making a career change, or you want to explore different options within your current field or your industry, one way you might be able to get some help is by using LinkedIn. A lot of us know about LinkedIn. In fact, it surprises me to this day. I was one of the early profiles on LinkedIn back in 2004. But you know what? I have never put it to use until now. And I have been reading the book from our guest, Anna Sardula. Now, I know a lot of people, or a lot of you are like I am, and it isn't just it isn't just those of us in midlife. My fabulous webmaster, Chris, who's a young mother and a mountain biker, doesn't use LinkedIn. So maybe you do Facebook or Instagram, maybe you're not so comfortable with any social media, but that's why Donna Sadul is joining us for Happy Hour. She loves LinkedIn. She is the author of the popular book, LinkedIn Makeover, Professional Secrets to a Powerful LinkedIn Profile. Donna is the foremost expert in LinkedIn profile optimization. She founded LinkedInMakeover.com, where she helps individuals from around the world brand themselves successfully using LinkedIn. So get yourself something good to drink, and when we come back, Donna will be here with us. You're listening to the Friday Happy Hour.
With food, fun, and family activities, the East Goshen Township Farmers Market has it all. It's one of the area's largest outdoor markets and is open every Thursday from 3 to 7 p.m. in beautiful East Goshen Township Park. Sample a variety of offerings from over 30 local food vendors, including returning vendors Big Sky Breads, Lavinia's Cookies, and Carmen B's Honey, along with many new vendors, plus fresh fruits and vegetables from local sustainable farms. East Goshen Township proudly sponsors the Farmers Market as a place to meet your friends and neighbors, as well as a local producers and artisans event. East Goshen Township Park is located on Paoli Pike, just east of Route 352. Brought to you by the East Goshen Township Parks and Recreation Department.
Sometimes the perfect way to express an emotion or celebrate a special occasion is with flowers. For flowers for any occasion or just because, no one does it better than Katie Mack Floral Design. Katie and her staff can help you pick flowers or an arrangement that everyone will love. And Katie Mack Floral Designs provides same-day delivery on all bouquets. If you're looking for a unique floral design that will stand out from all the others, Katie Mack is the place. Katie Mack Floral Designs is located at 365 South High Street in the heart of Westchester. Order your flowers by calling 610-431-9414. That's 610-431-9414. Need an idea for the perfect bouquet? Visit their website, Katie, spelled K-A-T-I, Mack, M-A-C, floraldesigns.com. Katie Mack Floral Designs is the official florist of the WCHG Morning Magazine Show and the Eat, Drink, and Meet Mary Show with Mary Bigham. Make Katie Mack the official florist of your family, too.
Hi, it's Sandra Lee, and you're listening to WCHE 1520 AM.
Welcome back to the Friday Happy Hour. And Donna Sadula, greetings to you.
Hi, Anne-Marie. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. You're at the shore, aren't you?
I am. I'm in Wildwood, and it's actually a little overcast today, but it's been a great week.
Oh, you have had one of the best weeks, Donna. I was thinking about you all week, and I thought, well, you couldn't have had a better week down the shore. It was sunny every day. Even today is a little overcast here, too, but...
It was. It was lovely. We spent almost every day right by the ocean, and it was great.
Oh, I'm glad you had a good week. Well, Donna, listen, when I was first listed on LinkedIn, it was because one of my colleagues said I had to be out there and that it was the next big thing in business. And she sent me some link, and her and a buddy were competing over who could get more connections or something. I don't even remember what she was doing. But she's usually on target with that kind of thing. So I put up a profile, but that was about it. And then nothing happened. And I thought, this LinkedIn doesn't make any sense. And, there's already not enough time in a day. And I talk to a lot of women, and I get a lot of invitations on LinkedIn. But, I can tell from looking at their profiles that they're like, I was. They don't have a clue what to do with LinkedIn.
Yeah.
But you're an expert at it. Now, first of all, how did you become a LinkedIn expert?
Well, it's funny because I joined LinkedIn back in 2005, and I had that exact same experience.
Yeah.
I was presented with a LinkedIn profile. It looked an awful lot like my resume. And so I did what like everyone does, which is I opened up my resume, and I started copying and pasting the fields from my resume into my LinkedIn profile. And when I was done, I was like, good job. Okay, opportunity, come and hit me. I'm ready for you.
Yep, that's me. Yep.
Yeah, and nothing happened, and LinkedIn seemed like this huge, colossal waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
But what really changed my mind was a few years later of not really using it at all, I was given an opportunity to start up a sales territory in Philadelphia, and I was selling CAD software to architects and engineers. That's computer-aided drafting software. And I had to build up this territory that no one had ever done really anything with for this particular company. And so I did what most people do when confronted with having to do, a huge scale type of sales situation. I got on the phone, I started cold calling. And I just cold called.
Yeah.
And
been there, done that.
Yeah, and it's painful. It's horrible.
It is horrible.
The one day, as I'm doing my cold call, I reach this amazing prospect, and I get an appointment set up with him. I actually get to go in there and have coffee and talk to him about his software, blah, blah, blah. And as soon as I hung up the phone and my heart was beating, I was so excited. I was so happy because if I got this sale, this would mean so much. And what was the very first thing I did? As soon as I hung up the phone, I Googled him because I wanted to learn everything that I could about him.
That's right.
And at that exact same moment, as I'm Googling this guy, I thought to myself, I bet this guy's Googling me. And what is he going to find? I had never Googled myself before. So I took out his name. I put my name into that search engine. And what was the first and only result was my LinkedIn profile.
Oh, how about that?
And it was my old, out-of-date resume.
Huh.
And I thought to myself, oh, my gosh, here is my chance to brand myself as a high-performing executive, someone whom he could really count on to help him and his business. And instead, he gets...
like a dud. Nothing wrong with your resume, Donna, or mine, or most of my listeners. But if it's just the resume, it's like...
Right. It doesn't really say anything about who we are and the benefits we provide. It just talks about what we did. That's what resumes are. They talk about your professional past. Your LinkedIn profile is your career future. It's who you are and how you benefit people. It's why people should like you. And it shouldn't be a copy and paste of your resume. Even if you're looking for a job, it just still shouldn't be a copy and paste of your resume. It should complement your resume, but it should really talk about who you are and why people should want to get to know you better and why they should trust you and why they should like you.
Well, but you know what, Donna? Let me ask you this. Like in your book, you say that after you did that makeover, LinkedIn started to make sense. In what way did it start to make sense?
So what happened is this. I
decided at that moment that branding was absolutely imperative. And so I went about and I did everything that I could to take that LinkedIn profile and turn it into a career tool, a sales tool, a business tool. And I really wrote a summary within my LinkedIn profile that was compelling and intriguing and interesting. And, you know, when people started to research me, they'd find my LinkedIn profile and they would read up about me. And they felt more comfortable and more confident in who I was. And I found that as I would walk into these sales meetings, people greeted me more warmly. They knew me better already. I was able to create a rapport up front just because of that LinkedIn profile. And then from there, I started to ask for recommendations that people would post on my LinkedIn profile. And so that, too, began to assist me. Because when people would say, oh, you know, should I really work with you? I'd say, well, check out my LinkedIn profile. I've got tons of recommendations from your peers. You know, and that helps. And the more I started to use it, the more I started to realize, wait, if I connect with people up front, you know, I can get past the gatekeeper. You know, I don't have to always give a, you know, do that cold call. I can connect with people in other ways.
Yeah, Donnie, you know, and that's the thing. Like, sometimes when you're trying to get to somebody, you can't get to the person you want to talk to because you have at least one really good admin who's keeping you from doing that.
Yeah, and so it just started to, one thing after the other, started to really show me that LinkedIn was more than just this, like, social network. It really is not Facebook. It really isn't Twitter. It's a business tool. And, you know, and the other thing I started to do is I started to use it even more for myself. And so not only did I start, you know, I knew people were researching me. Well, I started researching other people, and I started to find that, you know, my key clients all belong to the same groups. And so I started to join those groups, and I started actually going to these real-world association meetings, and I started to have even better real-world interactions. And so all in all, it became this amazing tool that got me to a point within that company where I was very successful.
Well, now let me say this. When I read a lot of resumes, so when I... And the first thing I do is, because, you know, you can put anything on a resume, and they're usually very dry, and you're absolutely right, that, and if I Google them, and all that comes up is their Facebook page. One time, there was somebody I got a resume for, and I Googled him, and his Facebook page came up, and while the page was private, and I couldn't see what was on it, the picture that he had there was a violent one, and I thought, okay, we don't want this.
Right.
You know, I think...
People are always looking to learn more about you.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever they find, they will use to form some type of an idea of who they think you might be. And so you need to take that control and make sure that you shape it to the way that you want to be perceived.
All right. Well, Donna, what's the difference between... Since reading your book, mm-hmm. I went back into my LinkedIn profile. I think I changed all of my profiles from all of my different jobs over the years, and I think that I changed, you know, from what I do now, I was thinking about it when I was doing this, and I'm sure my listeners are thinking, what's the difference between a good profile and an underperforming one?
Right. That's a very good question. You know, and ultimately, the difference is really two things, one of which is, do you receive any type of opportunities through LinkedIn? Are you finding any success? And if you aren't, chances are your profile is just simply not optimized.
Now, when you say, what do you mean, like people wanting to connect with you or look for business from you?
Yeah, it could be people looking for business. It could be people just, you know, looking to connect. If you're not really getting any type of interaction or emails or in-mails, it could be because of that. But ultimately, did you copy and paste your resume? If you copied and pasted your resume, that's a very good chance that your profile isn't optimized. Or did you upload a picture? Or are you using an unprofessional picture of yourself? That's also another sign. Did you just use the default information that LinkedIn gives you? Those are all signs that your profile is not optimized.
All right. When you say using the different... Now, I uploaded a professional picture, and I've redone it, so... All of my resume, it was all done in third person. So I went back and I made it more personal.
Mm-hmm.
But when you say if I'm just using the default settings, what does that mean?
So your headline, for instance. Now, I will tell you this, Anne-Marie, your profile looks great. I looked at it earlier today.
Thank you.
It is really, truly a wonderful profile. But let's say it wasn't. And if it wasn't, then your headline would probably just say radio talk show host and nothing more. So it would just be the job title of your most current position. Whereas what we really want to see is someone who really puts a little bit more effort in, and they don't just accept that. But, you know, you go in there and you infuse it with your keywords and more interest. But, you know, ultimately, this is what I believe. When you are going to sit down to write your LinkedIn profile, what most people do is they look at it and they fill out the fields. They just answer the questions.
Mm-hmm.
But a person who's really going to optimize their profile, what they do first is not just open it up and start, you know, either copying and pasting or just filling out the fields, but they say, wait, stop. Why am I on LinkedIn? What am I trying to accomplish? Am I on here to find a job? Am I on here to really showcase myself as an expert? Am I here because I want to sell my services and my products? Right? Once you decide why you're on LinkedIn, now you have a strategy and you have a goal in mind. And then you want everything to you write to work towards that goal. And so if you are a job seeker, you know, you're going to talk about yourself and the types of your strengths and your abilities and what you love to do. Whereas if you are selling a service or product, you're not going to talk about, you know, how much business you can close and your quota. You're going to talk instead about helping your clients, you know, find the right solutions for their needs.
Well, you know what, Donna? Earlier today, I was talking to my webmaster, Chris Contento Angel, and she's fabulous. And I asked her if she uses LinkedIn, because when you and I first talked, we were talking about women in midlife. And I think somewhere in the conversation, one of us thought, that people who were younger were using it more. But Chris is younger. She's in her 30s, and she doesn't use it. And she said, well, I'm really not looking for a job. But what you said is, I guess the way that you said it is, you're branding yourself as an expert. So even if you're not looking for a job, but you are thinking, and earlier, you might have heard some of what I was saying earlier today, about thinking about what you're going to do after retirement, LinkedIn might be an opportunity to start showcasing those skills before you need to be in that position.
Absolutely. I mean, really, with LinkedIn, it's all about networking, and it's about finding those people that who could, you know, help you or that you could eventually help yourself. And so you want to be on LinkedIn, not just for the branding that the LinkedIn profile gives you, but also to create that network of people that you know and you trust and people that, you know, that you can eventually help at some point. And you have that network, and that way you can continue to communicate and you can broadcast your own information to them.
But Donna, you know, I get a lot of invitations, and some of them I don't even know why they want to connect with me. And then some of the messages that I get are sales pitches. So how do you know whose LinkedIn invitation to accept?
Well, you know,
now you're what's called an open networker, which is a little bit different. We'll talk about that in a minute, but I'm not. So I have about 300, I don't know, I think I have about 300 or close to 300 connections.
Yeah, and as an open networker, I have close to 20,000 first degree connections.
Oh, my goodness.
So there are two different schools of thought. There is the school of thought that says, I'm only going to connect to people that I'm close to, people that I know, that I trust, that I like, that I can recommend, and that I can introduce. And in that situation, you want to say to yourself, do I know this person? Are they truly in my network? Have I met them in some way, shape, or form? And if the answer is yes, then you absolutely, you know, open your network up to them. You accept them. But, you know, or if you're on my side of the scale, you might say, are they alive and breathing? Okay, I'll accept them. But, you know, you could also sort of go into the middle of that scale, and you can say, well, look, I might not know them, but they look professional. They have a strong network. You know, why not? What's going to hurt if I do accept them into my network? And, you know, and if they are within the area, if they're within, you know, your industry, what's the harm in accepting them?
And that's true. That's what I do. I received a very nice invitation, and it said, I think that we have something in common. She referenced a group that we're in together. She said she gave me links to her Facebook page, her LinkedIn profile, and her Twitter feed. So I had a chance to really look at who she was, and then it was an easy thing to accept that invitation.
Yeah, and it's always nice when they include a personal note saying why they want to connect with you. It's a little harder when the person just, you know, uses the default message. And in that situation, you look at their LinkedIn profile and you go with your gut. And there's nothing wrong with saying yes. Because with LinkedIn, the way it works is when you search LinkedIn, you're not just searching everyone on LinkedIn. You're only searching your network. And so if you want to have a greater pool of people that you can search and find, and, you know, in the opposite manner, if you want to be found by more people, then it makes sense for you to accept more people into your first degree network. You'll get more views. You'll get found more easily. You'll have more success.
Well, you know, when I was reading your book, you said, I wrote it down here, the more people you have in your network, the higher you rank in LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you know what your rank is in LinkedIn?
Well, what I meant by that is in terms of the search engine ranking. So if someone searches you either by name or they search for you by keywords that you should, you know, pop up for, you will pop up higher when you have a larger network. It's just the way it is. If you do any type of broad-based keyword search on LinkedIn and you look at the people who rank up high, who are, you know, number 1, 2, 3, you'll see that they have really large networks.
Huh. Well, I look at how many direct connections I have, and it's like, as I said, almost 300. And I don't think I know that many people, but so I don't know how that happens in the whole ranking in LinkedIn, but there's something that I took notes to in your book, and you suggest that people benchmark their LinkedIn profile.
So
why do they do that? How do you do it, and does that make a difference in your rankings?
Well, what you want to do is you first want to just look and see, you know, how are you doing right now? I mean, how many times are you popping up in search? You know, how many times are you getting viewed per day? You know, and that kind of gives you an idea of how you're performing. And so then once you start optimizing your profile, then you can see, okay, you know, I'm making the right choices. I'm utilizing the right keywords because my views are increasing and more people are connecting to me. So it allows you to really see that there has been improvement, because if you're not benchmarking, who knows if you're doing the right thing or you're doing the wrong thing. So that's why I suggest benchmarking. It's just one of those things where you really do need to know where you were so you know where you're going.
So you're saying it's almost like Google Analytics, where you say, oh, how many people came today? And is that what you're saying? Like, and how many people came by today? I think I don't quite get. I understand the Google Analytics a little bit, but as far as the benchmarking part,
how do you use it? Okay.
Yeah.
So this woman had, you know, read a whole bunch of my blog entries. She was a CEO, or I'm sorry, she was a CPA. And so she, you know, she kind of filled out her profile. She wrote she was a CPA. She worked for a local firm. And, you know, she put a little bit of information in there. And she noticed that just by the little work that she did, she wasn't really seeing any great improvement in her profile views or even, you know, being found. She wasn't getting any calls or anything. She called me up and she said, Donna, you know, I tried to do everything you told me to do, but I'm not seeing any improvement. And so we sat down, we talked, and I said, well, you know, this does seem strange. Let's look. And when I noticed this, she only referred to herself as a CPA. When I started to ask her more questions, I said, well, how do your clients refer to you? And she said, well, they call me their accountant. They call me their bookkeeper. They call me their, you know, their financial advisor, their tax advisor. And I said, well, maybe these are the words that people are using to try to find you. They're not using CPA.
Oh, so that's the keyword part.
Right. And so as soon as we started using those additional keywords, we put in accountant, you know, we put in accounting, we put in bookkeeping, we put in QuickBooks, we put in tax advisor, we put in business books. We put in all of these new keywords. The next thing you know, people started doing a profile because those were the words that they were using. They weren't using CPA.
Interesting. So, you can look from last month to this month, or even just from day to day or week to week, and something that you tweak will tell you whether you've tweaked the right thing because you're making more connections.
Yeah, you'll see that you're getting more views and you're having more success, and so then that gives you an idea. Okay, well, you know, let me keep going down this path. So it's just one of those things. You want to benchmark because it'll let you know you're doing the right thing.
Now, one of the things I know on Facebook and Twitter, and I believe it's the same on LinkedIn, is that whole thing about engagement.
Mm.
But it's definitely different on LinkedIn than the other two. So if I want to be more engaging, what are two the best ways to engage on LinkedIn?
Well, with LinkedIn, they also have status updates, just like Facebook, very much like Twitter.
Uh-huh.
It's on the homepage. And so certainly by, updating your status messages, you can post, ideas and articles, and that's one way of staying upfront and in touch with your connections. So when they view their homepage, they'll see that you've posted these updates and you've hit their newsfeed. So that's one great way to stay, top of the mind aware. The other way is you can work with groups, so you can get involved that way. But you can also simply connect with people and message them directly. So it's not necessarily one of those let's aim low and wide. I mean, you can really determine who's out there that you really want to connect with, and you can message them individually.
So here's a for instance that earlier this hour I was talking about a couple of articles that I read for midlife makeovers and retirement makeovers and things like that, and I post them on my blog for today so that my listeners can go and take a look at those, but I can also post those on LinkedIn, and that further defines me as an expert in that field.
Right. You can even find local groups where your target audience might be on LinkedIn, and you can post it there as well as a discussion for people.
Now, something else I didn't know. You can follow news and company?
Yes, you can.
And how do you do, like, why would I do that, and how would I do that?
So ultimately, let's say you are a huge lover of anything Apple. You love your MacBook Pro. You love this company, so you might follow them. And so what that means is you go into LinkedIn, you type in Apple, and you find them, you hit follow, and you can follow their updates. So just like you might want to follow a person, you can follow a company and see what it is that they're broadcasting and what updates they're posting. And the other way you might think about it is maybe you want to keep in touch with your competition and see what they're doing. So that might be a company that you might want to follow, a competitor.
Mm-hmm.
You might also want to think in terms of companies that you're really interested in perhaps partnering with or working for, and those would be great companies to pay more attention to and see what they're posting.
Great ideas, Donna. Great. Now, about recommendations and endorsements.
Yeah.
Those are things that I get a little confused about because I have a lot of people endorsing me, and I have a couple of recommendations. Like when people have sent me an email and thanked me for something and told me they really like something I do, I send them an invitation to post that on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
That's different from endorsements, isn't it?
Right. So think of it this way. An endorsement is a person basically giving you a thumbs up for a particular skill set. So it's more like they're just clicking a thumbs up for a strength that you might have. So a keyword. All right. So it might be Anne-Marie Kelly. She's great at motivational speaking. And that's it. It's just them saying, you've got a strength there. Thumbs up. You go, girl. Whereas with a recommendation, they're actually going to take a little bit more time.
That's
and they're
right.
going to sit down and they're going to write a paragraph, at least a couple sentences, saying how you've motivated them, when they went to see you speak, they were just so enthralled they decided to, do whatever it was that their life stream was. That would be more of a recommendation.
And you know, Donna, sometimes people say they're really embarrassed and they really are not comfortable asking for that. But what I tell women with regards to this, and you know already that I know almost nothing about this, except that I do know that when somebody says to you, thank you so much for, and they tell you what they're thanking you for, it's easy to say, can I put that in writing and could you post that on LinkedIn? Because
yeah.
It's their words. They've already said it. They don't have to think anything up. They don't have to do anything. They already know it. And so all you're doing is making it easier for them to give you that recommendation.
Yeah. And Marie, I go one step further. I actually take that email. I copy and paste what it is that they just said. I go straight into LinkedIn. I go to their page and I click on that little drop-down button and I say, ask for a recommendation. And I actually get right into the recommendation request window and I say, and I write it down. I said, thank you. So it was great working with you. The wonderful words you said to me have truly made me smile. And I'm wondering if you might be so kind as to post them here on LinkedIn. And then I'll paste exactly what they said and I'll tweak it a little bit just so it looks even better. And I'll say, feel free to add or, you know, to change, to edit or change completely. And by doing it that way, you're setting them up. So
you're making it easy. Yeah, you're making it easy for them to do that. And most people want to do something nice for you, so you're making it easy for them to do it. Well, ain't you smart?
Well, you know, with LinkedIn,
that's why you're the expert, Donna.
Well, thank you. Well, I will tell you this. With recommendations, it's not so much what the person says. It's who says it. So make sure that when you do ask for recommendations, you're asking for recommendations from people in high places. All right? Because the beauty of LinkedIn, especially when you relate it back to like the old resume and you always would have those the recommendations, you know, at the bottom of your resume, the reason why recruiters and hiring managers love seeing recommendations on the LinkedIn profile is they can actually click on that person who's recommending you, and they can find out more. They can find out where they sit within the organization, who that person is.
Interesting.
And so it gives it all the more credence and credibility.
Well, you know what, Donna, this is way too much information, and my listeners are just going to have to get a copy of your book. Can you tell them what you have for them today?
So, absolutely. My book is available on Amazon, but it's also available on my website. It's linkedin-makeover.com, and my book is there. But, you know, I also know that it's really hard to do what I've just talked about. Writing is really hard, especially when you're writing about yourself. And so we do have services available to help people where we'll write your LinkedIn profile for you. In fact, we'll even write those recommendations. We'll even write your bio. We'll write your resume. We'll do all of that for you, and we'll make you look absolutely A+.
Well, Donna, that's all great information. Thank you so much. I'm so glad that you came to Happy Hour today.
Oh, thank you.
And I hope to talk with you again sometime.
Absolutely. I'm always here for you. Thank you so much, Anne-Marie.
Thank you. And you're listening to the Friday Happy Hour.
Discover a sense of community with Heatherwood Retirement. Living here means you can leave the chores to them while you take part in their varied activities or join their award-winning garden club. Residents can choose between private cottages nestled in the beautiful 25-acre campus, their spacious one- and two-bedroom apartments with a new model that's now open. Visit them now on the web at heatherwoodretire.com or call 610-273-9301 to speak to a senior living advisor. That's 610-273-9301. Heatherwood, the right choice for retirement living.
Tune in for The Brynn Project every Wednesday at 12:15 and Saturday at 12. She has the latest in fashion, beauty, fitness, entertainment, and lifestyle. Plus, you never know what celebrity will call in to join the conversation. Like country music star Darius Rucker talking about the cast of Duck Dynasty in his Wagon Wheel music video.
It was my wife's idea. She knew I loved the show, and actually when she said it to me, I was like, they're never going to do that. 2 days of shooting, and it was the most fun I've ever had making a video.
Or actress Hayden Panettiere, the star of Nashville, talking about how she wants to separate her love of music from the character she plays.
Country music's a passion of mine, and it's a road that I would like to explore. Right now, I'm concentrating on the show, and who knows, maybe down the road, I will venture down that road as Hayden.
Or some of the cast of CMT's Party Down South talking about all of the hot new details from their latest season.
Athens, Georgia was close to home for a lot of it. You know, where, like, we had dirt and mud, and there was country, a lot of country stuff for us to do, so it was easy for us to just kind of fall into place.
You don't want to miss The Bryn Project every Wednesday at 12:15 and Saturday at 12 right here on WCAG 1520.
No more hurt. No more fear.
No more silence and shame.
13 million people are physically abused, raped, or stalked by their partners each year.
No more jokes.
No more laughing. No more disrespect.
There's nothing funny about domestic violence and sexual assault.
No more feeling powerless to stop it.
No more being uncomfortable and afraid to speak up.
No more waiting for someone else to do it first.
It's time to say no more. Tell everyone you know. Together, we can end domestic violence and sexual assault. A message from the Pennsylvania Coalition Against Rape. Learn more at PCAR.org.
Feeling powerless to stop it.
No more being on.
Hello there, I'm Kat Dealey from So You Think You Can Dance, and you're listening to WCHE 1520 AM.
Welcome back to the Friday Happy Hour with me, Anne-Marie Kelly, and joining us for some social media chick-chat is a good friend of Happy Hour, author Pam Mariani. How are you doing today, Pammy?
Great, Anne-Marie. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm just wondering if you have any news for us today.
Well, I do a little bit. I just got back from meeting a wonderful local publishing house. I'm not going to mention any names just yet.
Right, right.
But it was a wonderful, wonderful afternoon. And I do believe that we're going to be doing some work together.
That's great. And for those of you who don't remember that Pam Mariani writes stories, tell my listeners about Dingles and your stories.
Well, the first book is on a baby girl adoption, which was me with my mom and dad, and it's called A Baby Makes a Family. That's told through the eyes of a puppy named Lita. And then there's Dingle's Special Day, and Dingle's gets adopted from the SPCA into a beautiful, really cool family with a little girl nicknamed Rue. And then it's about their journeys. So I speak very well through dogs and cats.
You speak very well, not through dogs and cats, too, Pammy. But I know that whenever we've gone to a book, you know, like do the book shows that sometimes you and I have done together with some of our other author friends, people like that. Yours and Elaine Kelly's book about Among the Buildings That Touch the Sky. Those are the two of the popular, really popular ones because they're for kids.
And they're pretty colorful, and they each,
yep,
all of my books and even Elaine's books, and they teach some really valuable lessons, and it really elicits some great conversations with kids. So I'm really blessed that way, and today is an exciting day, so thank you for letting me share.
Yeah, I'm glad that you did. I'm happy for you. All right, so you're a midlife woman. Do you use LinkedIn? You listened a little bit, I know, to my conversation with Donna. So
just
do you use LinkedIn?
Very little, but, you know, I am a real novice at LinkedIn.
I know, but in Donna's book, it's really interesting because there's so much, and you know, as authors and speakers, we really need to be more engaged on LinkedIn because it really extends our reach differently than Facebook. But Facebook is your medium, isn't it?
It is my medium. I love Facebook.
Are you but let me ask you, are you on Twitter at all?
No, I don't tweet at all.
So Facebook
I'm gonna
is your
to learn.
Thing.
But my other thing is that what I really would love to learn is doing a blog. That sounds it's going to be in my next project. But the reason why I like Facebook is, and it's for any, I think the older you get, sometimes you know how the days just fly by. We don't have any time. I love it when my family and friends post pictures and showing me their children or grandchildren and what they've achieved and what they're doing. I love that type of sharing. And, even though it's on the computer, I find Facebook to be pretty intimate.
So when do you do it? You have a full-time job. When do you do it?
I either do it very early in the morning or later on in the evening. And I also use it as a vehicle. Dingles has a Facebook page, which hopefully will be growing. So I use it a lot for my books as well. When I'm attending a show or a fair or a book fair or a festival or something. And it's funny because I've gotten a lot of people to come out to those events just because, oh, saw you on Facebook or in different groups, you know, my high school group or my college group. And I think that's awesome.
Well, do you have, when you do that, like for Dingles, do you have a, I didn't even know you had a Dingles page. So do you have, is that set up separately and then do people just go in and like it? Or like on your page, I know you and I are connected through Facebook, but can anybody connect with you on Facebook or do they have to do that whole like thing and then you have to accept them?
No, yes, you do have to accept them.
Okay, even on the Dingles page?
Yes, and I have to get a little bit better at that too, because you figure, let's just say you have 300, 400 friends on Facebook,
mm-hmm.
and you wanted to tell someone about something that was happening. How often do we get the time to call 400 people? Never. So to me, it's an instant way of communicating.
So how often do you post?
Pretty much every day.
And
several
what do you
times
post?
A day.
Like, I'm not on Facebook every day, so what do you post? And for my listeners who might be interested in doing that, what could they post?
For example, the other day I got something in the mail from the Goshen County Fair, or the Goshen Country Fair, and it's an awesome little fair, and it's really not that little, and it's right up here on Westchester Pike. It's an awesome country fair.
Hmm.
And a lot of people say, oh, you know, you're driving down Westchester Pike, well, you don't see the sign or you missed the sign. And people, oh, thanks. I forgot it was this weekend or so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I heard a really great quote, I might post that. Or, I mean, sometimes it's silly because I'm sort of known a little bit for what I'm cooking in my kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll take a picture and post that.
I've seen that.
You know,
I know. You do it.
And it's really great. It's really great, the sharing that goes on.
So you think that the whole thing with Facebook is worth your time. It's worth making the time to do it. And you feel you really get something out of it.
I do. Both personally and professionally. And I hate to say it, even spiritually. A lot of my friends they follow like Joel Osteen or whatnot, and they're putting up some really great spiritual quotes. And I enjoy seeing that. Sometimes, you know, you're in the middle of the day and I have Facebook on my phone, and sometimes all of a sudden I'll look and, oh, something came in and it brightens my day.
Well, that's a good way to look at it. There have been times when I've seen things on my Facebook page and they certainly don't reflect my personal feelings, and it annoys me to see them there. So, you know, sometimes I think maybe it's when I first started that kind of turned me off a little.
Well, I did see a couple people, and this was a long time ago, that would post things that I was not pleased with. And to be honest with you, I don't do it often, but I took them off my Facebook.
Yeah, and how do you do that?
I forget because it's been so long, but I know that you could defriend someone. But I made sure that I called them and said, this is the reason why I'm doing it.
And let me ask, Bryn's right here, and I know she's on Facebook all the time. Bryn, how when somebody's posting on your page, I know I've done it myself, do you unfollow them or you unfriend them? What do you do?
I've always felt bad unfriending, but there's actually a way to hide them from your newsfeed. So that way, if you don't want to go as far as unfriending them, you can at least hide them from their newsfeed if they're someone who is constantly posting up negative comments or things like that.
So if you unfriend them, do they get a notice that you've unfriended them?
No.
So why are you upset about unfriending them?
It's my guilty conscience.
me too, Bryn.
So, but you can just hide them from the feed so that you don't...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's what I've done, because it was somebody that... It wasn't even my feed. They were posting on somebody else's feed who's linked with me. And so I really didn't like what they were posting, and it was sort of consistent. And so I just... You're right. That is what I did. I hid them.
I've hid people because of the games and all the points and so-and-so got this and this game. And it was just, I had to hide people because that seemed to be all they were doing all day on Facebook.
And you just wonder where people get that time. You're a game player, though, Pam, aren't you?
Unfortunately, yes, I am. But I don't pay for anything.
So
there's actually some games that...
Don't you do Candy Crush or something like that?
I do, but I don't pay for anything because that's just not what I do, and I'm not going to waste money like that. But everything else, I mean, and Bryn knows, and I think the pictures that you can post of your family and friends of what you're doing, I've heard a lot of comments saying... you know, oh, wow, I didn't know that you played bocce, or I didn't know you could cook like this. And I think that's going to be the beginning of my blog.
That's great, Pam. Hey, Pam, it's time for us to go, and I'm so sorry that we have to, because we're having a good conversation. Thank you for coming, and thanks to all of you out there for coming to Happy Hour. I love closing out my work week with you, and I really appreciate that you listen in. And everything is on my website at victoriouswoman.com, so just click on the Victory blog and go to the wrap-up for Happy Hour for today's date, and you'll find all that information. And before I forget, psychic Christy Cavallo is going to be with us on the 15th of August, so mark your calendars now and make a plan to call in and get a free reading. And before we go, I have seconds. I found two quotes from author and speaker Amy Jo Martin, and I put them together in a frame around social media for us midlifers. Social media is dialogue, not monologue, more like a telephone than a television. Social media can be a powerful force for good in the world, and that acts of kindness can be scaled globally. Thanks for listening today. I'll see you next Friday at Happy Hour. Chin's on.